Magda, the world has changed almost 360 degrees a couple of times round since we last engaged. Where do you even want to start in today's environment with our discussion?
Bronwyn, I think you start day by day because the world is changing every single day, or at least Donald Trump is changing the world every single day. You know, it almost feels like he wants to be the headline news in Financial Times every day. So the world has, I mean, he has turned the world upside down. And I think he's done it in an irreversible manner. So, you know, one of the things I think he's done now is he's completely destroyed the trust globally in US being a reliable partner, be it politically, economically, business-wise. I think that's gone out the window. We are in the world of transactions, out of the deal.
So the global order has absolutely changed, but the US is still the superpower. And it means we've got to dance to Donald Trump's tune.
I'm on 100%. I mean, at the end of the day, there is only one word that comes to mind, and that is, well, first of all, transactional. Donald Trump is transactional. And the second one is you've got to be pragmatic. And you have to be pragmatic both at the country level and at a corporate level. You know, since it is all about negotiation, you need to negotiate. And I think, you know, it's naive to suppose that you can negotiate as a bloc because he's targeting individual countries. And, you know, as a consequence, you have to put whatever you have on the table and start negotiating. You know, in terms of South Africa, what do we have? I mean, we've got, you know, minerals and metals. We've got platinum. We've got titanium. We've got manganese. That is what we have. We have the ability to give Elon Musk Starlink access. So there are things we can put on the table and negotiate. And they are a superpower.
You bring up Elon Musk, his wingman, right? He's getting a lot of airtime. And we've heard President Trump actually talking about Elon Musk's access to extremely sensitive documents. He's been given access and he is allowed to change and hire and fire. This is a South African born entrepreneur. Yes, he has risen to global stakes, but he is Donald Trump's wingman.
Broden, of course he is. And I think, you know, looking at Elon Musk, the fact that he's South African means that he can never run for the presidency of the United States. In fact, he can't run for any office. So he has done everything in his power to come as close to being president and as he possibly can. So he, for all intents and purposes, he's president by proxy. And that is what you are seeing. The problem with Elon Musk is that, you know, he's completely unpredictable and he doesn't care. He is the richest man in the world. He does not care. He will do things as he, you know, sees fit. And I think, you know, what has been a bit of a tragedy is the fact that, you know, he acquired Twitter. Twitter has become his megaphone. And as a consequence, of course, of various actions, you know, he's taken, advertisers fled, well, before now. And people who were left behind were right-wing nutters. And hence, people who became his following as a consequence are the right-wing nutters. That is who is, you know, spurring him on. And I think you're seeing that coming out in him. You know, he's pandering to his audience and his constituency.
So we are in the news headlines for the wrong reasons right now. We've got Ramaphosa going up against Trump on the expropriation bill. And I'm not sure this is a war we want to take on in terms of South Africa versus the US versus Trump. Again, Magda, it brings too many elements to the fore around our allegiances and countries that we have aligned ourselves with that are not favored by the US. So this could be the start of much bigger trouble for South Africa.
I think it's trouble for the world, because I think what is happening is that you can't but take sides. And you are going to, you know, this concept of South Africa being neutral, and that's what we say, of course, not what we do, is out the window. You actually do have to take sides. It's either East or the West. And that will dictate access to trading markets. It will dictate, you know, the tariffs that might be imposed. And I think, you know, the world has now, it's not an issue will gradually, it's an issue of has become completely polarized. So, you know, you've seen Trump taking pot shots at, I think Australia is the only continent, well, Antarctica, that he hasn't picked on. Because we've had Denmark, we've had Panama, we've had China, Mexico, Canada, South Africa. I'm struggling to see, you know, how many more? And so, you know, we can't but take sides. And of course, we are visibly seen to be part of BRICS. And I don't know that that is the wisest choice that we can possibly make. Because at the end of the day, you know, foreign investment flows into developed markets. It's not as if China is, you know, absolutely booming. In fact, it's in an economic collapse. So China is not going to invest in South Africa. They're not going to provide this access to, you know, an amazing export market. In fact, they're dumping their cheap exports into South Africa. So, you know, arguably, you really have to sit down and decide commercially, what do you get out of either relationship? And, you know, at least now you've got hopefully more voices around the table. That, you know, it's not just ANC and ideology, that you have some commercial perspective on this. One can hope.
Do you think we'll be able to remedy the situation at this stage? As you say, our allegiance has clearly been to the BRICS and more specifically towards China, obviously part of the BRICS. But do you think that we can actually about turn and start putting the US as a priority market?
Well, Mexico and Canada did. So there is no reason not to, having chosen a position, go in and negotiate. I mean, that is exactly what we have just seen countries do. And, you know, but there's another realization. Since, you know, everything has become transactional, it's become transactional both at a country level, but also at a corporate level. Don't forget the corporate level. And at corporate level, it is naive to suppose that there are no senior executive teams sitting, multinational companies or, you know, or regional companies, where the executives have not been tasked with sitting down, identifying their reliance on United States as a market, and being given the brief to diversify, 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 and diversify away from reliance on the United States. And of course, you know, that is not going to happen overnight. But given the trust that has been broken, it is happening right now. And, you know, once that happens and corporates start diversifying, there's no going back. You know, once you've developed new markets, established new supply chains, you're not going to revert back to United States as being your primary customer. But it will take time. But, you know, Donald Trump, transactional. Everything is up for negotiation.
Talk to me about how this changes your investment themes. Does it, or does it have no bearing on your investment themes?
You know, that is the most difficult question that you could have asked for, because it's not an issue of where do you want to invest. It's more a question, and that is what, you know, what we are tackling right now. It's where do you not want to invest? So by process of elimination, what's left? You know, you can't invest in China. Europe is looking glum. You know, it's not going to be Africa. It's not going to be emerging markets. you know, given Trump, so emerging markets are gone. Europe is by and large gone. China is gone. What's left but United States? But then, you know, and that's the only, as much as, you know, his tariffs might or might not be imposed, that is still the fastest growing economy with a huge, you know, consumer market. So in terms of investments, you know, it's one of those things where you want to say, Warren Buffett, invest in S&P 500 and close your eyes, because the long term is the long term. Short term is just speculation.
And a couple of themes out there, I want to understand whether you believe they are being changed by Trump's decision, for instance, to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, to withdraw from the World Health Organization. Does this change the thesis that, you know, these overriding themes that have dominated for so long, are we actually, again, just seeing them disappear from the investment landscape?
Bron, by and large, yes. And that, you know, actually predates Trump. So already in the last year plus, you know, it's not as if Biden pitched up at the COP28 summit, did he? Large companies like JP Morgan's of this world, like BlackRock, have effectively withdrawn from any ESG initiatives, or they basically withdrawn from taking ESG into consideration as an investment theme. So that has happened by default, or started happening, you know, before Trump came into power. Obviously, you know, I still think this drill, baby, drill must be the best campaign line slogan ever invented. It's glorious. Absolute genius. And so, you know, yes, I wouldn't want to be an electrical vehicle manufacturer right now.
So, right, we see those themes completely changing. As you say, it began before Donald Trump took up the presidency. Let's come back to the South Africa spectrum. And you say it's not South Africa to invest in right now. Emerging markets are not in the investment horizon. But you are headquartered in South Africa as Signia. Does this change anything around Signia itself and your perspective in terms of your headquarters and your outlook?
Well, I actually am more positive about South Africa than I've ever been, or at least that I've been for the past decade. I think on the political front, we are seeing change. I mean, be it gradual, and I think it will take ANC quite a while to adjust from being, you know, effectively it's our way or no way, to actually ruling as part of a democratic setup. Because I keep saying, you know, Cyril Ramaphosa has been amazing because he has restored democracy. By taking ANC to 40%, he has restored democracy to South Africa. We are, you know, for
that's
the
a good way of looking at it, Magda.
Not quite years. We haven't had a democracy. We've got a democracy for the first time. And as a consequence, you know, I'm actually quite positive. And I think, look, it's a market for stock pickers, definitely. But look at it this way, you know, in terms of institutional savings. So we talk about retirement funds, retirement annuities. 45% can be taken offshore. 55% of the money has to be left in South Africa and has to be invested by default in South African equities, in South African bonds, in South African infrastructure. So there is a lot of money sloshing around. And so you know, given the positive politics, although, you know, of course, Trump is upending all of that. But if you just look at South Africa itself, I think from a domestic perspective, it has become an attractive investment destination. And I'll give you another data point. So as you know, I spend half my time in South Africa, half my time in the UK, but I'm tax resident UK. And UK has introduced all these new tax rules, which make it a very unattractive destination for anyone with any money. So everyone is sitting around the table with their tax advisors to figure out what to do next. And, you know, I had a couple of tax advisors around the table a couple of weeks ago, and they told me that South Africa has become a very attractive destination and that a lot of wealthy South Africans are coming back and registering for tax back in South Africa. And in fact, when, if we introduced one little, you know, SARS could, I'm not saying resolve its problems, but, you know, SARS could introduce or get us so much tax revenue out of one little policy change. And that is what Italy, Greece, and Switzerland have. Taxed on your income within South Africa. Everything outside of South Africa is taxed at a flat rate of tax. So, you know, Italy has 200,000 euros a year. That's all you pay on your global wealth. Whatever you earn in Italy, you pay tax on at normal rates. Imagine if, given the climate we have, given what South Africa is, imagine if we introduce this flat rate regime where suddenly you would have the same millionaires and billionaires who are leaving UK in droves. You know, it's the statistic is £1 millionaire is leaving UK every 45 minutes. Imagine if we could attract them here. And they would all pay 200,000 euros to the fiscus. How many people in South Africa are paying that, you know, amount of tax? But, you know, that's something to put on the table for SARS.
Absolutely. And we've got the State of the Nation address. If you had the president's ear right now, other than the salient advice that you've given on the tax side and the ability to attract in billionaires and millionaires by taking your advice, what else would you get him to do?
I think that, you know, I would listen to the panel of economists that he had put together, some of the leading minds in South Africa. Listen to them. Listen to the policies that, you know, they are putting forth as growth policies for South Africa. Because unfortunately, you know, top minds in the country apply their minds to this, to economic growth, to, you know, looking at poverty, looking at unemployment. But as much as these forums are put together and they put together policy papers, the policies are not implemented. So one is listen to the economists, your own economists that you have collated in a panel. You know, the chairman of Signia, Professor Harun Borat, is part of that panel. Listen to business. You know, you for the first time, I mean, again, we've had years of business engaging with government, but it's not really engaging with government. It's engaging with ANC and their perspective. Listen to business. And yes, you know, business is transactional. Business is commercial. They want to make money. But business in South Africa will only make money if South Africa is prosperous. Engage with business and be, you know, genuine and honest about it, as opposed to smiling and nodding your head and then, you know, going off to your farm. Listen to the economy. Listen to business. There are growth strategies that we can put on the table. You know, there's more. If we stop the nonsense with BRICS and aligning ourselves so visibly and taking photographs with Putin, maybe fewer photo ops and more domestic focus. And of course, G20. You know, we do have the chairmanship of G20, so we at least have a podium to talk as South Africa and to show leadership as South Africa. At least, again, it puts us on the map. So there's a lot that could be done.
Absolutely. There's a lot that could be done. And you talk to the G20 presidency, certainly a huge opportunity if we play that correctly. Magda, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. And I know that our BizNews audience, as always, will appreciate your insights. Thank you very much.